Welcome to the Logstat, the Army's premier podcast on all things sustainment, where we analyze new developments, discuss current trends, and forge the path ahead for the next generation of sustainment soldiers. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Logstat. I'm your host, Captain Garrett Powell. So excited to be coming at you from Army Sustainment Week, where we're meeting with a variety of Army senior leaders, seeing how Army transformation is going across the formations. We're seeing all the new innovations, different things that are coming with transformation and contact. It's been a fantastic time, and I am so excited to be bringing these all this to you. So today, sitting down with me, I have Lieutenant General Christopher Mohan, who is the Commanding General of the Army Material Command. I'm so excited to be kicking off this series with you today, sir. So I'll pass over to you, kind of give you a little time to introduce yourself to the community.
So my name is Lieutenant General Chris Mohan. I've been in the Army for over 40 years, 37 in September as a commissioned officer. I'm a lifelong sustainer, and I am very proud and humbled to represent the blue-collar workforce of the United States Army, which is your Army Material Command. We drive the trucks, we fix the food, we work and operate our depots and arsenals across the Army, but we also have a presence in nearly every single installation where there are soldiers you're going to find an AMC, or most of them are wearing coveralls. Because we're heavily a Department of Army civilian and contracted workforce, but we're really proud of the work that we do for the Army.
Nice. Well, thank you very much. That's amazing. So 40 years?
Yeah, 40 years.
Wow. So you've seen...
I started when I was 10 years old.
So you've got to see a lot of when it comes to transformation across the force in that time period. And as we get into... Of course, what the Army's experiencing right now in transformation, can you kind of walk us through, for those out there who don't know much about AMC, what you all do?
Yeah, so first of all, for the audience, again, as someone who's been around a long time, I have never seen a more exciting time for us to be changing the way that we do business in the Army. We have support from the top down to try new things, to question the status quo, and to embrace technology to make us a better Army and a more lethal fighting force. And so for our part, we have three major themes of lines of effort, if you will. So that is reimagining the organic industrial base, that series of depots, arsenals, and ammunition plants that we operate on behalf of the Army, enhance the soldier experience, which is changing the way that our soldiers live, changing the way that they handle data and do their everyday task, as well as, and finally, deliver ready combat formations, which is the most important thing that we're doing, which is enhancing the readiness of our Army to make us more lethal.
So I know we're getting a lot of that this week with Sustain Week, and seeing each of those in action and hearing from a variety of leaders of how they're taking those concepts and then implementing them across the force. So can we get more into those individual things, like what your all team is doing for Army transformation?
Yeah, so let me just pick one. So reimagining the organic industrial base, and this is also directly related to the deliver and ready combat formations, is what we're doing with advanced manufacturing. Look, the world is moving rapidly to an end state of being able to rapidly manufacture at the point of need. Not only, and we lots of times we get really focused on we're going to print repair parts or print drone bodies or print whatever, but we're also expanding beyond that, and we're actually 3D printing facilities now. So let me just touch on a couple of those. So first of all, recently we were given additional authority from the Secretary of the Army, I think as a result of the demonstration of how fast we're moving on some other things, to really put our arms around the entire Army's advanced manufacturing for combat readiness program, and help us get it to an end state of where we are producing a lot more repair parts that are qualified repair parts, that we have embedded capability across all the way from the tactical, operational, and strategic, so to really streamline that capability we have. As well as to experiment with new technology. So, for example, look, we manufacture wiring harnesses in the organic industrial base, and it'll take think about an M88 wiring harness. It'll take 30 to 40 man hours to manufacture one of those on a big board that every wire is traced, every terminal is terminated. We're experimenting with some technology right now that will take that 30-hour process and put it on a 3D printer that will actually print the wiring harness and then spray the protecting coating on top of the wires, which will give you that routing all on one machine.
Oh, wow.
That is about, you know, square to this, and we can do that same wiring harness in less than an hour. And we can do it at scale. And so think about a small UAS and the components for small UAS. We're doing the same thing. We're building small units or components for small UAS in order to help feed the both what is happening within the Army, but also commercial industry, because as you know, about 85% of small U.S. parts are manufactured in China or Taiwan. And we believe that's a strategic risk for our country. And so we're manufacturing small brushless motors. We're manufacturing small wiring harnesses. And we also 3D print microelectronics and circuit cards already for radars. And so we're going to do the same thing for small UAS with the ability to feed our tactical units parts that are part of the controlled supply chain so that they can manufacture those small UAS and assemble those small UAS at the point of need. And that's just one example. The other is what we're doing with digital twins. And so we are building a digital twin right now of the M88 at one of our industry or our actual academia partners. They're disassembling an M88 part by part. They scan it, they test the material qualities so that we have then a file of parts that we can rapidly manufacture at the point of need, either at one of our depots or arsenals, one of our industry partners, we're building a network of industry capability, or if they have the right kind of machinery all the way down at division or even brigade level. And so having those digital files is incredibly important. And that's just another example of how we're rapidly advancing advanced manufacturing.
Yeah. And that's just a unique concept to see. Like, you know, we see at small scale that they're showing off some 3D printing downstairs, and just that's of course the small scale of it. And a lot of times that's what people think of. They hear advanced manufacturing, that's all I think of, is just 3D printing, and that's it. And, but there's so much more, as you just described.
Yeah. So we do, we 3D print titanium parts. We do laser powder bed fusion as well with you know, massive industrial quality machines. We also have the world's largest 3D printer at Rock Island Arsenal that can print. It's called the jointless hull printer that can actually print an entire vehicle hull out of aluminum.
Oh, wow.
It's a massive machine. And then all the way down to some very small capability that will be integrated in with the MWMSS, which is a tactical capability we have at the brigade level. But key to all is the digital repository of files and the digital linkage between each echelon of capability, which is probably the hardest part, is linking all the machines and the files together.
Mm-hmm. And that's the key.
That is the absolute key.
So say I'm a junior soldier, you know, maybe I'm a junior mechanic, or maybe I'm like a young company commander.
Yeah.
What should I expect to be able to see with this?
Yeah.
Kind of.
And so let's you have a deadlining fault on M88. Pick a system. Mm-hmm. We've also done the 777, the Bradley, or we're getting ready to do the 777. We've done the Bradley, the H-64, the UH-60.
Wow.
And so we're building these files out. So imagine you have a deadlining fault for some kind of wiring harness or a hard part, right? A bracket. You look in the supply system. That part is not available in the supply system. But at the same time, your Allied Trades warrants are scrolling through the 026 report, and you're scrolling through, and you see that deadlining fault. You see that it's a back order status. And then you do a quick search of the digital repository that we've established, and you see, oh, wow, I can manufacture that part. Here's the digital file. I have the right kind of machine and the right kind of material. You can print that part or fabricate that part, you know, cut the parts on a water jet printer, because advanced manufacturing is more than just 3D printing, right?
Yeah.
So you can cut those parts on a water jet printer. You can weld them, certify the welds, and then put that vehicle back into operation. In the future, right now there's a lot of manual touch. In the future, actually we had a session yesterday. We need to have AI agents that are constantly crawling through our data that will automatically slew those parts or that requirement over to advanced manufacturing when it sees that there's a back order status for a repair part.
Just the, as we talked about, the time it saved, the money that's saved by doing this, course, you know, we talk about in-house or just at higher levels and what that's bringing to the warfighter, and just be able to keep that warfighter in the fight longer. A system goes down, we can get that system back up much quicker now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and there's also another important aspect of it that that we're using data to do is, and that's our telemaintenance efforts that we do. So, for the past several years, we have been heavily involved. AMC has been heavily involved with our Ukrainian partners, helping them diagnose and fix, donated equipment that they're using on the battlefield right now. And which started out with an Army warrant officer and a couple of NCOs doing it via phone calls, grew to a telemaintenance capability that we now are spreading across the Army that will allow those video chats, allow the passage of depot level skill sets down to the operational force, and think about a widely distributed battlefield that is very lethal. Being able, instead of sending LARs or sending depot maintainers forward, you can pass those skill sets down. And then if you need special tools, you could potentially fabricate and 3D print those special tools based upon the digital repository that you have access to on tactical communications. Mm-hmm. And so we see a significant increase in maintenance capability forward as we look to the future. And then the last layer is you change, we were on the cusp of changing the way that we do PMCS. But I told you, I was an M1 tanker from the very beginning. And if you look at what happened when I was a private in 1986 to what is happening right now, we've not fundamentally changed the way that we look after our vehicles. We still do manual PMCS. We still rely on handwritten notes. We still rely on a supply clerk to a mechanic to validate, a supply clerk to then manually punch into G Army, et cetera, et cetera. Look, we're changing all that. And AI-driven, AI-assisted with chatbots, AIAM, artificial intelligence-enabled maintenance, that application is out. It was homegrown by one of our commands, CECOM. You can go download it right now. You'll see a suite of equipment there is an actual chatbot that will help you do maintenance and help you diagnose your equipment. So really proud of the work that CECOM is doing. We also have another app that will roll out soon called Checkmate, which is on a soldier's government-provided device. You can put it on your own phone if you want to, or you can put it on a TAC device for next-gen C2 that will allow you to upload your equipment. It'll download step-by-step of how to do PMCS. You can take a picture of it if you are not sure of where you're, where the vehicle's leaking. A mechanic can view that over the shoulder or electronically. It'll help you pick the right kind of part, so we're ordering the right kind of part, and all that stuff will flow seamlessly through the supply chain. So we're really excited about that, and that's going to fundamentally change the way that we do maintenance. We're also fundamentally changing the way we do property accountability. Another process that has not changed, like you, I commanded two companies. If I was going to go be a company commander today, my first command was in 1995-ish. Probably wasn't even born then, maybe.
No, yeah, I was then. Yeah, 94.
94, okay. But we haven't fundamentally changed the way we do property accountability. You still get a printout. You still go down and hand, look, all that is changing, and that one will be coming out. By the time this episode airs, we will roll that across the entire Army, which is an app-driven. You CAC in, you download your hand receipt, and then you go and you click. And there's a picture there. You can take a picture of where you stored the piece of equipment. All the manuals, all the tech manuals are loaded. All that's coming out in the very near future as part of our transformation efforts.
I know the audience is very paralyzed.
That's exactly what it is, Parallon.
And we're very excited. We got to do a good episode. I sat down from the G4 office, and it was a fantastic, just to see that capability.
And it's better now.
Hey,
and you know what's important to me? That for our soldiers out there, Parallon was designed and vetted by our non-commissioned officers and supply sergeant warrant officers, but it was led and driven by command sergeants major. The previous command sergeant major of AMC, Jimmy Sellers, drove this thing hard. So this is homegrown. We did bring in some contractor help to do some high-level coding, but the massive amount of work has been homegrown.
And that's what's so critical, and that's what I love, like, when I'm having different guests on this podcast, is seeing the innovation and seeing the way the Army is listening.
It's powerful.
Because there was a time where people were like, oh, the Army's not listening to my concerns, but we are seeing this in real time, all the innovation that's happening based on the feedback that those on the ground are sending up.
Yeah.
They show up their star clusters, and people have listened, and now we're seeing these new innovations. We've seen Parallon.
Yeah.
We're seeing SEAM. We're seeing to campus-style dining facilities. We're seeing all this new technology, talking about the AI-driven systems, the data-driven sustainment, because people have put feedback.
It's an exciting time to be in the to be a sustainer in the Army, because we're moving and we're continuing to innovate as well, and we're not afraid. I call it, hey, push it off the edge of the table, right? See what happens, or throw it up on the wall and see if it sticks, and then use data to actually track where it's working or not. Campus style dining. A lot of people said, "Hey, look, this is not going to work. Soldiers are not going to. We've broken them from wanting to go to the dining facility." That's not true. We've got two facilities open: one at Fort Hood, one at Fort Carson, and both of them are feeding more than 200% more soldiers than they previously were.
Oh, wow!
The one at Fort Carson, I just looked at the data a few minutes ago, is over 300% more than the legacy dining facility. The food quality is just so much better. And there's a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of stuff behind the scenes that we've had to work really hard. But the soldiers are responding by going, and we are feeding more soldiers now on a payday weekend than I've ever seen in my career. Over 2,000 soldiers, both at Fort Hood, or 2,000 meals served in that one facility at Fort Hood and at Fort Carson on a payday weekend when we would normally serve about 200.
Wow.
And so it's, and again, the food quality is, and so I would recommend everybody, don't take my word for it, go see it for yourself. And then go talk to some, if you're a leader, one, get your butt in the dining facility to see where your soldiers are eating. And two, ask your soldiers. The last time I was at Fort Carson, I found that guy, right? He's a weightlifter. Mm-hmm. You could tell it just walking around, right? And I said, hey, it turned out he was a non-commissioned officer from the 10th Special Forces Group. I said, are you able to meet all your nutrition requirements here? He said, absolutely. This is awesome. He had this big thing of chicken, a big thing of cottage cheese, and I can't remember what the other protein, but basically three proteins. Yeah. And he said, this is saving me hundreds of dollars per month. Because I am previously, I would go off post and buy protein supplements and get my protein in other places. Now I can get it as his entitlement. Mm-hmm. We are morally bound to feed our soldiers who live in the barracks, and we're really excited about what we see. Now we just got to go as fast as possible. So Carson's open, Hood is open. We're going to add a second facility at Hood, and that's in progress right now. The team left Fort Carson and now is at Fort Drum. And so we'll open that one up June, July-ish, early July-ish, depending upon how much renovations we have to do to that facility. And then Fort Hood or Fort Bragg and Fort Stewart will follow. We've got a second solicitation out to do six additional installations in CONUS. Alaska, Hawaii are soon to follow. And so we're spreading this across the Army as fast as we call it because it's working. Mm-hmm. It is working. And so I just would implore all the leaders to get out there. And then if you're a soldier at Fort Carson or Fort Hood or Fort Drum or whatever, and it's not working, you need to let us know.
Exactly. You know, send that feedback up.
Send that feedback.
And that's how we're going to continue
to make it
better.
Even on Hots and Cots. Yeah. because Hots and Cots is responding, and the soldiers are responding to Hots and Cots, and we're getting great feedback. But we also need course corrections because we're not going to get it all right. We serve across the Army, we serve probably 500,000 meals a day, and we're not going to get all of it right. So let us know.
Exactly, sir. And I am so excited to see this innovation. You know, we talked about the last time we talked about campus style dive facilities. I'm someone, I love being able to go out there. Always had a heart for the 92 golf world and just being there with my cooks.
I tell people, hey, go hug a cook. And remember, the morning baking shift starts at 03.
People don't recognize the work it takes to both in garrison and in the field environment to get meals prepared. And that's why I loved having breakfast there, having do LPDs there with your soldiers. Yep. It's just a great environment. Now being able to have what it is now, not just a dime store or warrior restaurant, it's everything that's available there. You can get so much food. And like I know, like for instance, here on Fort Lee, we have the Victory Fresh, which is a much smaller version of that.
Yeah, every installation is not the same. So we'll have a different model.
But I love that.
Yeah.
It was, first of all, cost effective. You're not getting a meal. I think it was what, $7.25 I paid.
Yeah.
You're not eating out for something like that with the amount of food you get and the quality.
I had lunch at Fort Carson a couple weeks ago at Stackhouse. And I had a burrito bowl. So it had betta lettuce. I had grilled vegetables on it, queso fresco. I might have had some rice on it. I can't remember if I did, but I had pulled pork barbecue on top of that, a side of chips and a drink, and it cost me $6.70. And so here's another point on that one is for those that that live on, particularly those that live on the installation and housing, look, anybody can access the facility. As long as you have access to the installation, you have access. And I have seen pictures of, I haven't seen it with my own eyes, pictures of my first baby stroller I've ever seen in a dining facility. As well as high chairs in a dining facility. So we want families to be able to use this as well, particularly considering the price point and the quality, because you're not going to find this outside. Chicken sandwich, sweet potato fries and a drink, $5.70 or $5.50 at Fort Hood. I can't remember what I paid there, but look, it's quality.
It's quality.
Fresh salmon on the grill. I mean, and we've got a great partner that does this for a living. They feed at they feed the New York Jets, among they feed or colleges across the United States. They feed the athletic department at the University of Alabama, Roll Tide, LSU Tigers. I mean, they know how to do this. And what this is doing though is freeing up our 92 Golfs to focus on what they have to do, which is to feed soldiers on the battlefield and survive the modern battlefield. And so they can do PT. They can train with their equipment, they can train with their assigned weapons, and they can go to the field and on deployments with their unit, which is what they're designed to do.
Exactly, because I mean, having been an FSC commander and having been HAC commander, it's like trying to find that balance. It's like, okay, I got, you're managing that defect.
And the cooks get screwed in the middle.
And it's like, I got to do PT now, I got to go out in the field. It's like, oh, I can't pull these people. And it was a whole battle. And as you said, so like the cooks were the ones that were suffering.
Stuck in the middle, absolutely.
So I'm just so excited to see this change. And the great point you brought up is like, get families to go out, like lunch. Like it's one of those things,
right.
Like, I can go out and take my wife to lunch now there. And it's just that nice opportunity. It's like, hey, I can get away from the office, see the family for a little
bit lunch. It's convenient, it's high quality. And there's modern stuff in it. Like, so one, it's open from 6 o'clock in the morning until 2100 at night. And if you can't go in the dining room when they're flipping it between breakfast and lunch and dinner, there's a side, I call it a sidecar, that has a grill in it. It's got grab and go in it, but there's a person in there that can make you a sandwich, et cetera, et cetera. So we've solved that. You can download the app. You can order ahead of time. You can track your nutritional content of what you're ordering. It is a modern dining facility and eating experience that, that our soldiers deserve.
So highly poor everyone out there, and I've said it before, get out there, try it out. If you see something, send up feedback, good and bad. It doesn't have to be bad. Like, send up that good feedback too. Let these, the people that are working there, like, let them know how great they're doing. It goes a long way to send up that positive feedback as well.
Yeah.
And as we talked a little bit about the data too, when it comes to like the data-driven sustainment.
Yeah.
And we've talked a little bit when it comes to the advanced manufacturing and everything there. What else do you see coming down the pipeline with when it comes to data, when it comes to sustain? I know we've talked about precision sustainable, and like, what do you see the future going with that?
From a big picture standpoint, look, we can see into the supply chain unlike we've never been able to see before. So we started about 18 months ago with it was something for us to look into the supply chain, an application called Weapon System 360. And it really was designed for us to be able to see into the supply chain all the way down to the company supplier who is delinquent on repair parts. But as we continue to grow, again, 90% homegrown, we started integrating AI tools into this tool. It runs off of, it was internal at first. Now we've moved it to Army Vantage. And that has become a capability that we now use in strategic engagements at the Department of Army level. We have multiple corps that are using this tool. We have divisions that are using it. We have expanded it to now doing production production tracking down in our organic industrial base on the depot floor. And then recently we've integrated that data and that supply chain visibility into the Maven smart system. And so you now have, people are like, well, I got to have a cop for this. What I say about cops, it's just another pretty face, right? We need decision support tools. Mm-hmm. And so with an AI-driven tool in this, we can query very simple questions that would take us weeks to mine the data. Things like, hey, look, I've got $50 million to spend on M1 tank readiness. What should I do? And you just type it in, mm-hmm. and it comes back and says, well, you need to pull the following systems from the field, and it'll give you bumper number fidelity, bumper, and put these in depot overhaul. I mean, hey, how are you trying to resolve this problem? Is it on based upon readiness, based upon the amount of class 9 the systems are consuming, the number of man hour systems are consuming, or is there a readiness because these units are, do you want to separate it by what units are getting ready to deploy or where they are on a tip fid for a war plan? Mm-hmm. I mean, you can, and you can get those kind of answers in about 30 seconds. we have never had that visibility. And every time I turn around, we have added another aspect to the data. Mm-hmm. And the same with food. Look, I've got a dashboard on Army Vantage where I can look at how many meals we're serving at our legacy dining facilities. Every day.
Oh, wow.
every day. AFMAS data, right? How much each one of those meals is costing. And then make those comparisons to what we're doing with campus style dining to show that we're feeding more soldiers, that's more cost effective, et cetera, et cetera. We've never had that opportunity. And we're only gonna get better. And now the trick is to link all that data together. So like advanced manufacturing, we talked a little bit about that. We've got to link the data from the digital twins, the M88s of the world, the digital files, with our advanced manufacturing machining capability so we can pass it electronically and then link it into the supply system so the supply system is automatically passing those requirements to our advanced manufacturing machining centers to produce those parts at the point of need, mm-hmm. so we can ship them to the point of need. So, and a lot of times we have to go out and we need to buy a widget, right? In order to get a company to actually scale production to buy a widget or to build a widget for us, we've got to get them a minimum order of 100, 200, 1,000 or whatever for them to be cost effective in traditional manufacturing. What if we can do it and we can print 5 of them or do 5 of them at point of need, advanced manufacture them, then we don't pay for 1,000 of them. We don't pay to have somebody else store them for us. We can distribute them from a far forward machining capability directly to the point of need. We can do it faster and we can do it cheaper. Mm-hmm. And so linking all that data together and those systems together is a heavy lift, but we're really focused on that.
Yeah, it's amazing to see, like, just being here this week and just being so involved with, it's as a Harding Fellow, seeing all these innovations through the writing, through doing this podcast. And it's just that new time, like, we think back to different innovations throughout history. Yeah. The onset of the truck, what that did, with World War I, how that changed the way we're able to not just fight, but supply. Mm-hmm. We weren't just relying on wagon trains anymore.
Yep.
and the way the on, especially during the onset of the aircraft, more onsets of just naval warfare, just how every, I want to say almost like every generation sees this new transformation. And to see our transformation, one, it's just so quick right now.
Absolutely.
And the impact that it's having.
Yeah. And I'm a history buff. I have reminded multiple teammates, hey, don't be that dude or dudette who's sitting on a horse as a cavalryman in 1938 watching, you know, the first tanks do maneuver, saying that will never work. Mm-hmm. That will never work. And so we can't be the cavalry of the past, mm-hmm. Where we rely on our horses. We've got to innovate, and we've got to, and I think there's huge opportunity for us to get into autonomous delivery, autonomous demand, slew and queue, if you will. I mean, there's just we just had to embrace technology. Mm-hmm. I was telling the guys yesterday that we have a Tesla. It's my wife's Tesla. We have a small farm that's about an hour and 45 minutes from Redstone. On Monday morning, I knew it was coming directly here, so I was going straight to the airfield. I pulled out of our driveway in our Tesla and hit auto drive, put the address in, hit auto drive. And that car drove itself for an hour and 45 minutes until we pulled into the parking lot, basically, at Signature Air. Why aren't our convoys not doing that? Mm-hmm. And that was a combination of country roads, interstate driving, heavy traffic, stop and go, and parking lot. Why have we not, you know, we have to embrace that technology, and we have to be willing to embrace that technology.
Exactly. So I know we've hit a lot of different topics today when it comes to transformation, what we're seeing here during Sustainment Week, and just overall. Mm-hmm. Is there anything we missed today that you wanted to highlight to the community?
Yeah, I think that, again, it comes to linking the systems and linking the things we're doing. I know you've had a session on the operational readiness program. We're real mm-hmm. proud of that, how we are projecting power from the organic industrial base and connecting it to the tactical edge. Now it's a matter of creating layers. So it's more than just the depot maintainers. It's the extra toolboxes that they bring when they come down to a unit's motor pool. It's the data we use to decide in conjunction with the unit what vehicles we're going to harvest to send back to the depot to rebuild, to overhaul. It's the clearer PMCS data and fault data that we get from an app like Checkmate. Mm-hmm. It's the linkage to the digital repository so that we can repair more vehicles by advanced manufacturing with the unit's capability, like mm-hmm. First Armored Division has with their forge capability that they're mm-hmm. building. It's and then it's the deployment and supply chain data that we have when we project them over and say, okay, hey, look, here's how long they're going to be gone. Here's the health of their fleet, and here's what their common ASL should look like based upon the demand history we're getting and the live data we're getting off the systems that tell us when a system's going to have a fault. And so we have a whole different picture then, but it requires us to hook in all those different systems to come up with a decision support tool so leaders can make decisions about how to sustain those units.
Thank you for that very much, sir. It's been an awesome conversation today. A lot of wisdom from you out to the force. And as we get ready to close out today, you know, you have 40 years of experience. Yeah. You've seen a lot. You've seen so much transformation. Can you, as we're closing out here, what good advice, wisdom do you have for a sustainment community?
Yeah, we will never go wrong if we invest in the next generation. Again, hey, look, I'm in the twilight of my career. The next generation, that is everybody's job to grab the young officers, grab the young non-commissioned officers, and grab the young soldiers and double down on the investment in them. So, you know, our ORP program, when we combine a mechanic who works on M1s for a living, who's got about 15 years average of experience, and we put them with a young 91 Mike or 91 whatever, something special happens, and it's because the training transfer, and then we as the American Army can never walk away from our commitment to our non-commissioned officers. I've served with militaries across the world. The secret sauce that we have truly is our non-commissioned officers. Every Army I dealt with wants to know how do they build a non-commissioned officer corps, and we do it through deliberate investment. And then also we empower our NCOs, unlike any other Army I've been around, where we just expect our NCOs to go do things versus having to tell them to do things. Mm-hmm. And so if we can get that right and just remember that we are inherently in a people business, the U.S. Army is the service that's, and I proudly say this, is closest to the American people because we're a people force. And we have our National Guard teammates and our Army Reserve teammates that are in itty-bitty units all across our country. We are connected, and we can never break that confidence that we have with the American people.
Well, thank you very much, sir, for the wisdom. And I just fully agree with the NCO and just having that bond, that mentorship. I know I am very thankful for the NCOs in my life, my career, who to this day still give me mentorship. And just
whether you want it or not,
it's exactly,
that's the mark of a good NCO. You
know, and I know for me, it's like anytime I've gotten promoted, it's making sure it's always been promoted by an NCO. Yeah. It's just because of having that bond and just thanking them for that mentorship.
Absolutely.
And just appreciate you having on the show today. If there's anybody out there that has any follow-up questions, I always say, you know, cards and letters.
Yeah.
Where can they reach out to you or your team?
They send it to the PAO office at the Army Material Command, and we'd love to hear feedback and answer your questions.
Awesome.
Because we are your Army Material Command.
Exactly. So once again, thank you, sir, for taking the time to sit down with me, and excited to see what the rest of the Sustainment Week has to look like.
You got it. Thanks.
Of course.
Really appreciate it.
Of course. Well, there you have it, folks. Another great episode to kick off this new mini-series coming at you from the Army Sustainment Week. We have a lot of great episodes coming up for you for a variety of different senior leaders. I'm very excited to see these with you. Thank you once again for tuning in. Today was a great episode to kick it off. I hope you enjoyed all the transformation that's happening across the force. As we talked about today, things are happening fast. There's a lot to see. There's a lot to do. So stay in the know. Get out there. Stay up to date through the Line of Departure website. See all the new innovations. There's a lot of articles out there. People are writing them right now, what they're experiencing, firsthand perspectives. That's how we're going to continue to advance our profession and sharpen our toolkits with the different writings, as well as a podcast like this, to see firsthand the innovations. But that is all we have today, folks. As always, Sustainment Leaders Start Here. See you next time. Thank you for listening to another episode of The Logstat. We hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Please share this episode across your formation and leave us a review. If you have a topic you'd like to hear discussed, then please reach out to us at armysustainment@army.mil or directly to me on Global at garrett.h.pyle. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at the U.S. Army CASCOM page. We'll see you next time. Sustainment Leaders Start Here.